Welcome to Greatness, where the world's leading thinkers share their ideas about how to create greatness, great leaders, great teams, and great organizations. Why be good when you can be great? This is Gretchen Gagel, and I am so excited to welcome one of my most brilliant teammates, Evelyn Jonkman, to the podcast today. Welcome, Evelyn.
Well, thank you. It's really good to be here.
And so I should point out to our listeners that I actually looked this up. You and I are 10,000 miles from one another, or 16,000 kilometers, because Evelyn's in Amsterdam and I'm in Melbourne, Australia. So the power of technology to connect us over great distances.
It's pretty amazing. In fact, a lot of people are experiencing this connection through virtual interactions in many ways, aren't they, at this time?
Yeah. So, Evelyn, even before the global pandemic crisis, we started hearing our clients talking a lot about mental well-being. So the statistics are telling us that there's a deep-rooted problem here. I think maybe that's driving part of it. What are some of these, I think, are just crazy statistics about mental well-being and the impact on the workforce?
Well, they're looking at the environments we create at work, and they're starting to understand the way we've created work and built work actually inherently has stress points in it. It's creating a forum for stress. And it's interesting because when you look at these stress points, which I can tell you, you know, the biggest ones are increased pressure and workload, a sense of lack of support. They're technical problems, but the real issues is how are people helping me through this? How are my leaders or the people around me, my colleagues, showing up? And so the stress points are being exacerbated by a lack of people feeling like they're being heard. And so the way they've articulated that is, you know, there's negative work relationships, there's a lack of trust in my managers, and essentially it's really poor handling of organization change. So people in work are experiencing these stress, and then they're actually saying, I don't have anybody with me to help me work through how to do this. So they're feeling somewhat abandoned in this. So, and when you actually then talk to the managers about this, they're actually echoing similar points. They're saying, you know, the quotes are 62% of managers have had this sense that they've had to put the interests of the organization above staff well-being, either sometimes, regularly, or every day. So this is echoing this concept of there are all these stresses out here, and as a manager, when I have to make this choice or this perceived choice of whether I look after the commercial interests of this business and the business priorities or I look after my people, I am somehow being required, asked to, by culture, by some innate sense, to choose for the commercial, the business priorities over my people.
Yeah, that's a crazy, that 62% is a crazy statistic. And I think what's even more surprising to me through the research that you've done is the prevalence of the challenge of mental well-being in the workplace. And the fact that, you know, 39% of employees report experiencing poor mental health symptoms related to work in the last year, and 23% in the last month. That's a quarter of our workforce that's experiencing a challenge in the last month.
Exactly right. And that's sort of complicated by the fact that really only 51% of people feel comfortable generally talking about mental health. So as a general subject, I can talk about mental health, not even referring to my own mental health or being really vulnerable or specific about my mental health. I just feel uncomfortable talking about the topic full stop. So you're seeing that there's stress in the business. You're seeing that managers are feeling they have to choose business priorities over people. You're seeing that people are experiencing this poor mental health symptoms and that they can't talk about it. And then if they can talk about it, what's really interesting is you're seeing that managers are saying, well, even if I do actually broach this conversation in a way that's meaningful, I feel like there are too many barriers for me in the system to actually provide any support. So 70% of managers say, you know, if I go to the next step, I still have these barriers to actually dealing with these issues. So, you know, which ends up with a whole bunch of new problems. and real impact.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting point. I had a very real experience about this yesterday. So this is front of mind, and we've talked about, you know, there's some statistics around the stigma and the negative connotations that 1 in 4 people fear negative consequences if they make their mental health issues formal, or, you know, that they're not going to be recruited. And one of the universities that I teach at, luckily I teach at multiple, so we won't be able to identify this university, but they offered a course in resilience. And I'm always interested in what people are offering and, you know, feeling like, hey, I need to bolster my resilience anyway. But when we got into the course, everybody's name was identified in their Zoom square. And I saw a couple of colleagues in there, and it made me feel like, just for that split second, insecure, like, oh my gosh, how are they going to feel about me that I need to take a course in resilience? And there are so many subtle barriers like that to people even accessing mental well-being programs when they are available.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's absolutely true. And the interesting thing is that the way that we have traditionally, and I call we as in, you know, the workplace, has traditionally responded to this is to create these options or opportunities for people who are feeling stressed. Research tends to, it feels like you're being outsourced. So when I do have an issue or an opportunity to raise these issues, or I feel like I need to raise these issues, instead of really being greeted with this sense of, I get you, it's normal, a lot of people experiencing this, here are some ways I've experienced some of these stresses as well, and here's some of my coping mechanisms, what's happening is people are just going, oh, okay, I'm not qualified to deal with that. Here, talk to these people. And it's sort of not seen as normal. It feels like you're sort of being slipstreamed into this sort of channel somewhere. And so people don't feel truly engaged, that they're being engaged with and understood and legitimized. And so it actually continues to, there are systems out there, but they're continuing to stigmatize mental health and stress, actually. And stress is normal in our day to day. Everybody talks about being stressed. Stress is a normal part of performance in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So why is it so important, especially now, for organizations to get this right? From a business and a humanity perspective, why is this so important?
Well, we tend to see mental health as a problem and as an issue, which I find has been really limiting our possibility here. And why I'm really excited to be exploring this, because if you see it as a problem and an issue to solve, then you're constantly trying to fix it. But when you think about it as you know, it is part of who we are as real whole people in the workplace. And if you can understand how we show up as whole people, you can actually unlock so much more potential and diversity and different ways of thinking. And we're all looking at this moment, we're all looking for new ways of being creative and innovative, and we're looking for new ways of being that's really going to be required for us now and in the future. And actually there's lots of potential here. If people feel valid and valued and seen as whole, and I can bring my whole self into this work environment, I will be able to contribute in a much better way. And knowing that, but I want to contribute in a much better way. So if we actually switch this from a problem to a possibility, if we go from we're trying to make people feel safe and well at work to we are trying to actually have a place where people thrive and can bring their whole selves to work, all of a sudden, you know, it's boundless. The energy is possible. And this is the places where you end up with people feeling engaged, and which is, you know, another word, but, you know, they feel like they want to contribute. You know, you're getting unique contribution. You're getting people feeling intrinsically motivated to do something and to be in it. And they feel this sense of community. They feel this sense of autonomy and choice, and they feel this sense of belonging and also an enriched way of actually mastery and contributing in really rich ways, and actually improves work. And so when you start playing with those ideas, you can start to see that, you know, if we bring in some of the base philosophies of mental health, say one of them is, you know, try to create spaces where people have what they call psychological safety, you find that the people with high levels of psychological safety outperform targets by 17%. While those who don't have an are missing targets by an average of 19%. So if you look at that differential there, you're seeing that not only are we actually helping people feel better, we're actually increasing our business's performance. So, and work that's been done in this space would suggest that when organizations are doing things like company-wide based initiatives that actually change the underlying culture of how we do work together, you're seeing that there's a huge return on investment of this work. You know, some of the downright facts I'm getting from over 32 research studies done by Deloitte are suggesting that, you know, if we are spending money on actually building a culture of thriving workplaces, which by doing that will actually improve people's mental well-being and physical well-being and sense of wellness, you can get a return on investment of 6 to 1. So a dollar spent will give you $6 worth of value in terms of people feeling more engaged, people being more present, people actually not taking sick leave, productivity, all these things, you know, that they've been tracking tell you there's some real value in this. So I think there's a real opportunity to even shift the concept of we want to create mental well-being workplaces to we want to actually create places where people can thrive. And it's just different language, but the same thing.
Yeah, sounds like a win all the way around. So I'm thinking, great, this is a good idea. I care about my employees. I want them to thrive. I want this. What strategies and tactics should we employ to fully embrace a mental well-being program?
Well, yeah, that's a really great question and a really tricky one. So there's been research done all over the world on this. And what people are trying to understand is where is there evidence-based interventions that we can actually show are creating real value in this. The short answer is that it's difficult to find because we really haven't really understood the problem as well as we'd like to, and we haven't invested the money in programs yet. It's like I was talking to a colleague of mine and we were talking about this concept of, you know, the elephant in the room, that mental health is the elephant in the room. And I'm actually saying I don't think people even know it's an elephant yet. It's actually a non-seen problem. It's not even a problem in the room yet. But so, you know, you can't ask other people to tell me what are you noticing in this, because no one's actually seeing it. So what we've got to do is we've got to actually to bring it to the forefront and start to try to understand it and get our hands around it. Having said that, the people who have been starting to get their hands around it, and the research has changed phenomenally between 2017 and 2019. Already we know a lot more about it. And the most relevant research is the most recent research, because we're only just beginning to map what this problem is. We are finding that the best interventions are the ones that actually are grounded in building a culture in an organization. It's not about specific interventions or specific reactive or proactive activities for a particular individual. It's actually about creating a space where people, designing and creating a space where people can actually work together. And this becomes a part of how we are together and is dealt with. And not just only in the soft way, but also in a way that actually executes higher performance. You know, one of my defaults that I get trapped into is thinking about mental health as being, you know, something you need to be empathetic and, you know, sort of almost sympathetic for. But actually what I'm really learning is that when you have really clear, well-being, thriving places, you can actually have much better radical conversations. You can actually lean into really good feedback that actually improves performance. When people feel safe and feel heard, you're able to drive much stronger outcomes because you're having the conversations, because you're not sort of dancing around sensitivities, because people feel like they don't need to be sensitive because they're cared for. So by bringing care into the place and bringing thriving and creating this culture of we've got you, people are actually able to really speak up and address what's happening at the moment in a way that doesn't create immediate personal sensitivity but talks about the problem. When people are actually working about this culture, that's when the organization thrives. That's when people are doing really well, and that's when you start to get the performance improvements that organizations are looking for.
So I'm a leader, I'm a global leader, and I'm listening to this podcast. Where do I start? It can seem very daunting I think of that analogy of like thinking of it as an elephant. You know, what are the first bites that I take of the elephant? How do I get started on this?
Well, everybody, the organizations that are sort of starting to do this well, and this has also been supported by some of the research done on how do you create a sustainable approach, are essentially saying that the first step is really to get the concept of, and again, you can see I'm struggling with these words, mental health or well-being or thriving organizations actually on the agenda. So, you know, there's a whole element of this research which suggests that in our discomfort in this space and our tendency to outsource the problem or to slipstream the problem and channel it into something that's because it's not our expertise, we're actually not assuming any responsibility of either the implications of work stress or how we're responding to work stress. So part of us as a leader would be to actually start to see it and to acknowledge it and to, you know, take on where possible some responsibility, not maybe for the cause of it, but definitely for the way that you as an organization and you as leaders and people are responding to it. So some of the ways that organizations are doing that are things like public pledges, you know, the C-suite openly addressing it, actually talking about the cost and the scale, doing some research into what it actually costs. I do know that, for example, in the UK in 2019, the known costs of this are £44 billion per annum. That's just mental health issues. And that in terms of days in the year, in 2019, it cost 17.5 million days of work. So the costs are sort of starting to become very clear. So if you can understand that, and you can build some ownership of it, that's the start. It becomes on the agenda. And even in this, people are saying, make it a strategic priority. And while you're making it a strategic priority, please put at least three goals in your strategic plan in order to actually start to address this. Once you've kind of got that on the agenda, the second thing is they say, you know, get some buy-in. I mean, you're not on this alone. And we know that one of the biggest issues with this is stigma. So how do we raise the topic of the conversation so it becomes a safe conversation to talk about? If we refer back to that statistic of 51% people don't feel comfortable talking about it, we can see we've got a long way to go. So there's lots of things about how do we understand cost and scale, how are we getting collective commitment. We're talking about also building ROIs, also looking at more complex ways of measuring organizational impact. You know, a long time ago we started talking about corporate responsibility, but there's some really interesting work being done right now on social license to operate. You know, what is the impact of our organizations on the community and society we live in if we are creating places of dire stress, which is causing burnout in the people in our community. You know, these things are starting to bubble up in terms of conversations and are emerging as really good opportunities to start understanding the problem from different elements. And then, of course, once you've got the agenda and the buy-in, then it's about implementing the key initiatives. And there's quite a lot to research. But again, the ROI discussion would suggest that the best value is to actually not look at specific initiatives or responses, but to actually look at how do we create a culture of this. And so you really need to be thinking about this in a more sustainable system approach. And there are lots of good ideas out there, and I've been researching them and napping them to understand what dimensions these come into. Things like, indeed, creating workshops. One of the strongest ideas is that, you know, this discussion of thriving workplaces, of creating places where people feel safe and well, should be part of every single interaction somehow, or workshop or formal interaction with an organisation. So how do we bring that into bear? And you know, it's a bit where we were many years ago when we brought safety, you know, physical safety into the workplace. This is another dimension of it, if you like to think. But the end of it is also to make sure that you are tracking, that you are taking stock of, and you're upgrading the programs. You know, that you're constantly tweaking it on the basis of the maturity of the organization and refining it. You're adjusting it to continually be driving the outcomes you want from it, and to be creating safer and safer and stronger places where people feel they can really thrive, and evaluating the program. So if you want to think of it, you know, one of the ways to look at it is you know, you align thinking, you act and do things, and you check in on what you're doing, and then you adjust, and then you bring that adjust back into how are we going to align our thinking about that. And you do these constant cycles, and each time you're tweaking them so that you're actually getting continually greater improvements all the time.
That's so phenomenal. You know, it's interesting. I think about breakthrough thinking on things. And as I was preparing for this podcast, I was thinking about, you know, 30 years ago, we didn't talk about breast cancer. It just wasn't something that we talked about. And if you would have told me 30 years ago that American footy players would all be wearing pink to acknowledge breast cancer, I would have told you that you were absolutely crazy, you know? And so I think also just being able to openly talk about it, just like I started thinking one day, I have a physical every year. Why do we not have mental checkups every year? Like, how do we make that the norm to care as much about our mental well-being as we do about our physical well-being?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I'm just starting to connect some of the dots, but I've been working with organizations in Australia that are dealing with mental issues or mental health. I mean, one of my clients, and I'm sure that I'm saying, is the Australian Psychological Society, and I've been working with them for 2 years. And, you know, I've also done some work with a great organization called SANE, which works on people with multiple complex mental issues. You know, it's so interesting because I never connected the dots, but these people have been thinking about this for a really long time. And what one of the biggest challenges is we're now looking at people coming up with ideas like mental first aid. So, you know, where, you know, instead of going to a registered psychologist or we're going to an expert in this field, we're saying we just need a first stop, someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing already that we're picking this up as being a normal way of being, and there's polarities, right? There's gray scales and different scales of what that means. And so we can find different interventions for different levels. But if we pick it early, people are safer and are able to contribute for longer and feel more capable and connected. So, you know, this is some interesting things to play with in terms of the interventions we have.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely topical. You and I spent some time with a women's leadership group over here in Australia. And when I solicited topic ideas from them recently, and I mean, this was top of mind, you know, mental well-being. And as I said at the beginning of this, it's very topical now that all of us are dealing with this global pandemic. But months ago, years ago, and just starting to hear more people talking about this and being more aware of how do we create these thriving, our employees aren't engaged, they're not thriving, they're not doing well, how do we do something about this? Evelyn, any closing tips for our listeners out there that are kind of trying to wrap their arms around this very complex topic?
I think, again, I'm sort of reflecting and exploring my own ideas and thinking about this, but what I'm harking back to is this concept of when you're feeling burnt out and when you're feeling exhausted, what is becoming for me really clear is it's actually in leaning in and rebuilding deep connection with the people around you and the work you do that actually provides the sustenance that you actually need. The tendency might be to withdraw and to take yourself away from it, but really it's the opposite. It's actually being in connection where you get you can actually create more energy. It's a more font of real energy. So the temptation is to withdraw, but the request is to engage even more deeper because this is where you find your joy. So that's what I'm playing with at the moment.
Well, and that word community that we use so much in our team and work with our clients on building community and how we create human connectedness to unleash brilliance. And Evelyn, I'm so grateful to you for taking the time. Your thinking on this topic is incredible. Your depth of knowledge on the research out there. And as I sit here watching the sunset in Melbourne, I wish you a happy day in Amsterdam. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Christian. It's been great. Thank you.
Interested in hearing more? Visit us at greatnessconsulting.com. Thank you.